back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and Jake
McClure.
And we were just discussing presidential Republican presidential polls and the fact that Donald Trump still is in the lead. Scott Walker's at 13%. Jeb Bush is at 10%. And I think there is a pretty fascinating something going on there. And I'm sure I'll assure you I don't know what it is, but you got to admit that if it was Trump against Bernie Sanders is the guy who's leading on the Democratic side.
Right, right.
If it were, that would be one heck of an interesting presidential campaign. If there was a third, if we had a choice between
it would be the extremes
Donald
fighting.
Trump and Bernie Sanders and none of the above.
Most people would choose none of the above.
I just, on the other, and this is one of those, at least to me, fascinating issues. This is only if you poll the people who are likely to vote in the primaries.
Right.
So both parties, the people who are likely to vote in the primaries, are apparently focused on electing somebody that the general population will not support.
Right. And if you look at the general polls, the polls that are not based on the primary, who's voting in the primaries, you'll find that Jeb Bush and Hillary Clinton are in the lead. And that's just amazing that the country as a whole is looking for a Bush-Clinton dynasty rematch, and the primaries are looking for the most extreme conservative and the most extreme liberal in the pool to run. It's amazing.
And
it is a symptom of a problem in that the polarity of the parties, the voices of the parties are getting more and more polarized.
Shrill.
And at the same time, the center of the country, the not extreme in either direction, is growing. So if the Democrats want to keep a party and the Republicans want to keep a party, they need to reach to the center. And mm-hmm. Jeb Bush is doing that.
Well, this is interesting.
I'm not endorsing him, by the way. I'm just saying that's happening.
Our ex-governor, currently still under indictment for a felony, Rick Perry, has doubled his polling.
Oh.
He's gone from 1% to 2%.
Oh, well, that is the fastest growing that I'm aware of.
Yeah.
Popularity.
And I you know, you got to admit that is a tremendous jump in the polls for him. Christie is steady at 3.
Which is amazing because he is at the head of a mm-hmm. nearly bankrupt state at this point. It is right on the edge. If it doesn't happen this year, it will likely happen next year.
Ted Cruz has dropped from 7 to 5.2.
Because he's not being mean to Donald Trump, and Donald Trump is being mean to everyone.
Yeah, then I think, you know, maybe he's bucking for vice president or something under Trump. It's a really fascinating set of numbers if you look at who's losing ground and who's gaining ground. Rubio was at 10. He's now down to 6.8%. And it looks like, very frankly, that Donald Trump is sucking the air out of everybody else's fishbowl.
Yeah, and what happens...
To mix metaphors really thoroughly.
Yeah, suck the air out of the fishbowl.
Right.
Because that makes sense.
Yeah, and let me tell you, in this situation, it makes sense.
Yeah, so, I mean, if Donald Trump wins the primary, then it's likely that there's going to be a Democrat in office. If Donald Trump doesn't win the primary, it's likely that he will start an independent party, at which point it's likely that a Democrat will win the White House.
Now, wait a minute. I just looked at the polling data on the Democrat side, and it appears that the average of all the pollsters gives Clinton 58%, Sanders 18.2%.
Oh, okay. All right. So Sanders is popular, but not very popular.
Yeah, he's. It looks like with 58% right now,
What is amazing, and this is it's pretty normal, is that the Democrats tend to have fewer candidates, and then they tend to get in line behind those candidates and go forward. Where the Republicans, it's like a shotgun approach. One of these guys might work out, so we're going to throw them all out there and see what happens.
And they will destroy each other.
And in the process of destroying each other, it makes the people that were behind one of the other candidates upset at the candidate that's in the lead now. That's not good that's not a good role to play if you're trying to get everyone behind a candidate. It's just really not a good role.
The interesting thing to me is that Trump, a couple of months ago, was at 4%. And then he started making some rather bold statements that are pretty negative, to say the least.
Mm-hmm.
And he
jumped up to the top.
Promptly jumped to the 20% level.
I'm going to give you a comparison.
Okay.
Howard Dean.
Mm-hmm.
Howard Dean was low in the polls on the Democrat side. Really low in the polls.
Right.
He started making some really crazy statements, really left-wing statements, and took the lead in the primaries until he made a shriek on television. He just shrieked once, and it destroyed him. He yelled on TV. That was all it was, and then he was not electable.
You see, that's one of the things about Donald Trump that I find fascinating is I don't think there's anything he could do that everybody would be shocked at if he did it.
He's not
You're talking about gravitas and seriousness and the person he wants sitting
that.
There. He's
none
D,
of those things.
He's D, none of the above. It could say, well, it turned out that he committed adultery. Well,
how many times has he been married? Yeah.
Well, guess what? He's been bankrupt. Lots of times.
Yeah, and married lots of times.
Yeah.
And, I mean, every time he opens his mouth, he says non-presidential things.
So
it's really hard to say to the grand Ayatollah of Iran, you're fired. Because that's not what the president of the United States is capable of doing.
He could. He could say that.
He could put them on fire, yes. But that would be, we would be starting World War III if we did that.
Yeah, but he could simply tell him he's fired.
That's something I wanted to bring this up. We were talking politics here, so I'm going to take it to geopolitical.
Okay. Is that's different from GOP political?
Well, GOP political is very different, yes. It's a lot louder.
Right.
A lot of people have been upset about the deal made with Iran. They have said either we don't need to make a deal or this is giving them too much or and we talked for a lot of time over the past several years about the difficulty of doing nothing. It leaves Iran separated from the rest of the world. It leaves them in a place where they're at a semi-state of war with everyone because everyone's not doing business with them. And when you look at diplomacy, the last step before war is to shut off trade. And we've been at the last step before war with Iran for decades because mm-hmm. they made an act of war against us. So
right.
I mean, please don't hear me saying I think Iran is great. It's not. It's good. Their whole policy is wrong. They don't like us. We don't like them. But it's kind of like the Federal Reserve needing to raise interest rates, not because we think that the market is or the economy is overheated, but because in the case there's a crisis, we don't have anything to do. The Federal Reserve needs to have some leeway to lower interest rates. We don't have any leeway. We can't put more tariffs on Iran. We can't do anything else except for military action. And if we do military action against Iran, the Russians will respond.
Well, there's also the fact that Iran is contrary. We tend to look at Iran and Afghanistan and Iraq as all being kind of equivalent. Iran is really a big country with a lot of mountains and a pretty well-trained military and a lot of people.
It's really,
big. It would not be a country under any circumstances I would want to invade.
Yeah, it has four seasons. It has trees and mountains and forests. Yeah. And this is not we're not talking about, Afghanistan was rough. It had mountains, but not a lot of trees.
Well,
and it was hard to find people there. If you have mountains and trees, it's really hard.
And so basically we're left in a situation with them, very similar, by the way, to the one that we're left with China during the Nixon administration.
Right.
We can either get to some degree friendly and start trade.
Even though they've been really nasty people up till now.
And we can hopefully bring them around to the point where they're not active enemies.
And it's worked with China.
Or we can...
It didn't work so well with Russia.
We can coast down to war. Well, I don't know. Very frankly, I mentioned this last week that the Russians are having a problem in that the volunteers are returning home from Ukraine armed and trained in warfare and extremely more nationalistic than Putin is now.
Yeah, and upset with Putin for not invading all the way.
And actually, things are calming down there. They're not getting worse. They're right. calming down. The sanctions have worked.
The ruble is dropping like a rock still.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and that's a problem for them. Well, you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and the telephone number's in here if you'd like to discuss anything with us or ask us anything, presuming today is August the 1st, 2015, where you are. Then the telephone numbers would be 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
You probably never heard of the Carlyle Fund, which is perfectly all right.
Is it a mutual fund? Is it a charity?
It's a hedge fund.
Okay.
And there have been a number of hedge funds recently that have just, what they do is they, quote, return the money to the investors and shut down. But one of the things that's not in the news articles is the percentage of money that the investors put in versus what they get back. And what they're doing is returning 10 to 20% of what the investors invested to the investors and just shutting it down.
So that's what they mean by a 10% return.
Mm-hmm.
You just get 10% of what you put in. That nothing else.
That's it. Well, that's it. We
guarantee a 20% return. You give us $100, we'll give you 20.
That's it.
Thank you for the trade.
Across the Connecticut realm of hedge funds, every week I read about two or three more hedge funds that basically shut down and return the money.
Right. It's that whole thing about I'm not so concerned of return on my investment as much as return of my investment.
And again, even though I kind of beat the drum on that last week, this is one of those times, or last hour, it's one of those times when we need to be patient. And it's hard to be patient when you get low returns. But I can also tell you this is one of those times when the drumbeat for somebody who's got some wonderful theory about how to get you really high returns.
That's not been proven in any way.
That's going to get louder. And there are risks out there and there are rewards out there. And right now the rewards are being patient and having a well-allocated portfolio and recognizing where the real risks are. And the real risks, very frankly, right now, we don't even have any idea of the level of risk in the municipal bond market.
It's not good, though.
The issue, and again, one of those things I think people don't understand very well, is a bond market is not like the stock market. It's not a single place where everybody comes together and trades stocks.
Nope, doesn't work like that.
It's very much a case of you, and I use this as an example. Let's say you have a Killeen bond or a Temple bond or something, and you want to go sell it, and you go to a broker, because you have to use a broker. And you go to a broker and you say, I want to sell this bond. Well, what the guy does is he will contact some central bond selling agency, which will charge a fee. And they will kind of call around to see if anybody wants to buy it.
Yeah. It's kind of like, in a sense, if you have credit cards and you're trying to balance the credit cards across the board. This is loans again. And you want to transfer your credit card from one to another. You don't call the bank or the credit card company that has your money and say, I need to transfer the fund to someone, who would you recommend? You can't go to someone in the middle and say, where's a good place to get this moved around unless you're paying a fee? There's not a market for it. I mean, there's a market, but it's not a very good market.
Yeah, and even in ETFs, we're beginning to see a slow motion rush for the exits in bond ETF. So if you've got a bond ETF, very frankly, you really want to get some professional advice on that. And that ETFs are exchange traded funds where you can trade during the day and so on. They are beginning to depart from their underlying NAV, their asset values. And one of the things that could, and we could get a market correction here at any moment, I don't think so right now. Summer is, we're just too pessimistic. But the issue is there is a very distinct risk out there right now. And the risk is when something like Monday's technical default by Puerto Rico occurs and people discover they can't get any money for their bonds and it hits the newspaper and it hits the internet and people say, my, this is actually pretty dangerous. I want to get out of this. And people start to sell bonds, which they don't do very often. But let's say they notice that the prices are dropping and they decide to get out before it goes down any further, which people, that's a behavior that investors typically have.
Right. It's not very brilliant, but they have that attitude.
The entire bond market is very thin right now and has been for some time, but there's not been any demand on it. And that just means that
there's not a lot of people trading on any given day.
If a lot of people decide they want to sell bonds,
there's not a lot of people to buy them at any given moment.
You could easily wind up with a bond that you thought was a really cool bond and has a really good interest rate and it's really solid and everything, and you go to sell it. There's a distinct possibility that when you go to sell it, nobody will be willing to buy it.
Or if they are, they're going to buy it at a much lower rate.
And
much lower price.
In some cases, there have been, and again, I haven't experienced this because we don't deal in individual bonds, but I have read articles where people have gone to sell municipal bonds or even corporate bonds, and there has been as long as a six-month period before the brokers that they went through could even find somebody who was interested in buying them.
All right, now, let me throw a little caveat in here. There's an asset class, a group of monetary items that we call conservative allocation. And that includes some corporate bonds. And that it's interesting because we're being so hard on bonds right now, and we're saying that there's a risk. This is an asset class that we recognize has risks involved, but it's intended to do something on the other end to balance another risk. And that other risk is we don't know what the stock market's going to do tomorrow.
Right.
Tomorrow the stock market might drop, and this position hopefully wouldn't. So having a little bit of bonds is still good. You just have to recognize the risk involved in having it.
And the other side of that is, let's just say that you have a big mutual fund that has a lot of other stuff in it too.
Right, right.
And they have some tremendous advantages in being able to unload the bonds. But here's the point. Based on investor historic behavior, based on the type of securities they carry, there's a pretty high probability they can just hang on to those bonds and continue to draw the interest on them until they mature. And so they become, to some degree, predictable. We're in a really interesting conundrum right now in that the conservative side of a person's portfolio, the asset protection side of the portfolio, has a very high potential to be one of the more dangerous sides of the portfolio.
Right.
And so they have to be managed very, very carefully in a way that makes sense, recognizing that interest rates are not only almost, and I won't say almost, I won't say certainly, but I would be very surprised if the Fed did not raise interest rates in September.
Yeah,
they're not going to raise it very much, but
I would be very surprised as well.
There's a major consensus out there it's going to happen, and there's a very good reason for it. If you look at consumer spending in the second quarter, it was up 2.9%. That's high. On an annualized basis, we're raising consumer spending by 3% a year. If you look at although wages are largely static, if you look at the Federal Reserve uses an index that's based on the actual spending of consumers, what consumers buy every month, rather than a theoretical index like the CPI, and that is rising at 2.2% a year. And their goal was to have it rise at 2% a year. So I would be really surprised if we didn't see them raise interest rates a little bit in September, but 0.25%. And a lot of that depends, very frankly, on what Congress does next, because the next issue that we need to face, I'm jumping subjects here, it sounds like, but these are tightly interrelated. If we get a fight over the debt ceiling, and it looks like we may, if we get a big fight over the debt ceiling come up a little later this year, and the spending cuts, because there's no agreement, the sequestration cuts kick back in. They're out right now, but if they kick back in, the Fed will probably not be able to raise rates. The reason is it will peel as much as 1% off of the GDP if sequestration kicks back in because Congress can't agree on how to run a budget. These are all risks that are sitting out there right now. And so on one side, we have the risk that interest rates are going to rise, which would be really hard on bond funds. On the other side, we have a risk primarily centered around Congress, just like it was in 2011, that Congress will not be able to agree on a budget, and that will kick the economy down a notch, which will cause interest rates to, and you're going to think this is crazy, fall, which means the very things we've just been warning about in the bond area, very thickly traded bond, very healthy companies and so on, actually might do better. But again, municipal bonds continue to be very dangerous. Well, you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. Telephone number's in here, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And I thought we would take this opportunity to go ahead and play some more commercials so that KTEM can stay on the air, and we'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. And just like a bad penny, we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and Jake McClure. And the telephone numbers in here remain 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
So stimulate our brain with some kind of a question or something.
I've got something to talk about, and it's one that you have warned me about because there's a lot of emotion attached to it. I was going to talk about why Cecil the Lion is similar to our wage issues and the commodity issues of the price of oil.
Well, I suggest that you, because Cecil the Lion is dead?
Yes.
Okay.
That's one of the things. Cecil the Lion, and this is something, you're going to have to follow me along here and recognize that I'm not endorsing the actions of the person that killed the lion. I'm not unendorsing it either. This is one of those weird situations. The park that, let me give some background here for those of you that have been living under a rock because every news outlet has talked about it. Cecil the Lion, which is a national attractor for Zimbabwe, was a lion that has been studied for years by different universities. It's an attractor in that people take pictures of him all the time. And he was killed in a big game hunt that used bait off of the park, and he was killed by an American who paid a large amount of money to do it. Why am I bringing this up? What does this have to do with economics? This is the plight of the commons. About 80% of the budget for the Hwang National Park in Zimbabwe comes from big game hunting, from people spending outrageous amounts of money to go in and shoot animals. And on the surface of this, a lot of people look at it and say, that's horrible. It's horrible to go and kill things to save things. We do something similar here in the United States. When you're hunting for deer, it is what you do when you're hunting for deer that pays the state to manage the wildlife. And when we're talking about big game, we're talking about a larger fee, obviously. But this is a system that works all over the world. It's not perfect. The fact is that in the United States, obviously, from the response emotionally, people don't like the idea of people going across the world to go and shoot lions. The fact remains that this lion would not be news, except that he has a name and that people know who he is. The fact is that big game hunting happens, and it does provide revenue to the park. Jimmy Kimmel made a big wave by talking about Cecil the Lion, crying on the air about Cecil the Lion, and it was a big deal. It was a really big deal.
Who is Jimmy Kimmel?
Jimmy Kimmel is a late-night talk show person. He's on the same level as Johnny Carson was in your time. So, for those of us that don't watch TV, we have to watch YouTube, which does have Jimmy Kimmel on it every once in a while.
Okay.
So, if you want to tap in, Jimmy Kimmel did a spot where he talked about Cecil the Lion, and he cried on the air, and he asked people to send money in. $150,000 was collected from this. This is on national television, where a major figure had an emotional reaction, and if you look at Facebook or any other Twitter or anything else about this, you've got huge numbers of people that are absolutely outraged, but they're not sending any money to Zimbabwe to help save the lions. $150,000 is peanuts. It's nothing when you've got war zones happening all around that country, and you've got people with AK-47s that want to sell lion bones to China. The fact remains that this dentist, who I'm not defending, I'm stating some facts. He spent $45,000 in an auction last year to preserve an elk reserve in the United States. He's probably spent hundreds of thousands of dollars for the benefit of preserving and conserving habitat. The people that are angry with him, the vast majority of them, and by vast majority, I mean huge numbers of them, have never spent a dollar to save a lion. This is the plight of the commons. If the national emotional response to big game hunting causes people to be afraid to spend the huge amounts of money, the $50,000+ to go and do a big game hunt, it means that the Hwang National Park in Zimbabwe gets shut down. So in the emotions that are going on out there, and I realize a lot of people are very upset about this, don't just be upset. Come up with a solution. Because a lot of the charities that purport to do this have overheads that mean that only 20% or less of the money that's donated to them gets actually to one of these parks, where the vast majority of the money is coming from big game hunters to protect the big game. And I'm bringing this up because it is not being covered in a balanced way. It's being covered emotionally, which is great because we all feel emotional about it. Nobody wants to see things killed. We don't want to see lions killed because we all, you know, I grew up on the Mutual of Omaha documentaries, Wild Kingdoms, where they're talking about the falling population of animals all over the world. And people my age look at that and they go, that is horrible that people would spend money to go and kill that. But that's where the money for conservation is right now. Mutual of Omaha doesn't spend a whole lot of money anymore on conservation. There aren't big organizations in the United States that are spending money on conservation. It's big game hunters. And if we knock that out, all we've done is killed all the big game. So if you're really incensed about lions dying, put your money where your mouth is. Start a fund to donate to the park. Don't stop the revenue that they're getting right now, and that's what's going on. The people that are spending lots and lots of money to go big game hunt, and this guy evidently, I mean, he thought he was using the rules properly. The only reason why this was not the right animal to kill was because he had a name. Because the law says that if they're off the park, and this was significantly off the park, there's a lot of news that says that he was lured off the park, but the reality is this was tens of miles away from the park. He was lured. There was bait, but he wasn't lured from the park. Nobody went on the park, lured him off the park. This was a lone male lion, which usually means they don't have a pride. It usually means they're older, because younger male lions run around in male lion groups. So there was some bad judgment made. The fact is that you can't see the collar on a male lion because they have manes. And he had a GPS collar. Rules were broken, and that lion wasn't supposed to die. But again, this was a professional guide, a professional hunter, and I'm not defending any of it. I'm just saying that if we knock that out, if we knock out the funding from big game hunting, you better have an alternative. Because economically speaking, if you say big game hunting is bad, then you just cut off 80% of the funding to the Hwang National Park. You just caused national parks in many countries in Africa to have to shut down, and there's going to be no conservation because the rangers in those parks are getting paid when other members of the government are not. And they're not doing it just for the fun of it. Some of them might be, but most of them are not. So keep that in mind when Facebook is going wild and when there are effigies of dentists being burned. Recognize that that dentist probably did more for conservation than everybody involved in the crowd burning the effigy.
There's undoubtedly a lot of truth in that.
All right.
Again, telephone number is near 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
We're not exactly getting overwhelmed with calls here. So if you have any questions, this is a good time to raise them because
it is the middle of summer, and we are feeling it.
It is the middle of summer, and this is the time of year, by the way, when the market tends to slump. and we've talked about that many, many years now. It tends to slump in July, come back a little bit towards the beginning, at the end of July and the beginning of August, tends to slump again, come back again, slump again, and then take off in the fall. Does that mean it's guaranteed to do that? No. So the issue is to stay invested, and this is where all that bad news out there makes it difficult to stay invested. But it's important to stay invested at this point, to have a well-balanced portfolio. And I think one of the key things here, and this is one of those things that I think probably a lot of people haven't looked at, is to plan for the future and have a good plan for what you're doing. We have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Hey, guys, I have a confession to make. I actually listened last week, too. But last week you were discussing the presidential politics and talking about Perot and how he didn't want to be president. He just didn't want Bush to be elected.
Right.
I was just wondering why he, I never knew why he hated Bush so much.
Well, there's a couple of things. One, George H.W. Bush did not invite him to some kind of something, and I don't even remember what it was.
And he requested an invitation.
He requested an invitation, and he also requested something for his daughter. And he was snubbed, in his opinion, by George H.W. Bush, who, by the way, of course, was a Texan, and who apparently Ross Perot thought owed him. But there's a second issue, and this actually came out in several publications at the time. Now, I don't have personal information on it. But suffice to say that after President Clinton was elected, there was a bill passed, and there was a foreign aid bill passed, and there was money sent to Israel to redo their entire computer program, based not their program, their entire computer system that runs the nation. And it was issued to Israel on a no-competition rule. In other words, we're going to give this to Israel, but Israel must take the person that the aid agency says to take the company. There will be no competitive bids. It must come back to the United States, and it must go to some unnamed company that the aid agency designated. And it designated Perot's computer system company.
EDS.
No. That was after he sold. It was Perot Systems.
Perot.
And yeah. Perot Systems had, I don't remember how many billions of dollars, but there were certainly reports at the time that Perot Systems got paid about twice what another company might have charged to do Israel's computer systems, and it got paid directly out of the federal government by the guy who effectively got elected because Ross Perot ran interference for him.
Now, the question is, was there a quid pro quo? We don't know. There were no investigations on it. At that point, the Democrats had the White House and the Democrats had the Congress. So,
well, yeah, the Democrat, and there's an awful lot of interesting things. And if you look at Ross Perot's history, it's pretty consistent with the way he liked to do business.
And if you look at Donald Trump's history, and you look back at what he was saying about politics 10 years ago and compare it to what he's saying about politics today, you'll find that he's either completely changed every aspect of his politics
or he's finding
a way to make a profit, which is what he does regularly.
Right. I would not be, and I don't have any evidence of this, and I'm not saying it's happening.
But it's fun to have conspiracy theories.
And I initially thought this was just a joke, but it isn't really a joke. The fact is that if you look at Donald Trump's political positions 5 years ago, and you look at him today, he's come 180 degrees. He would have been the perfect ally for Hillary Clinton 5 years ago, and today he is leading the Republicans, and even if he gets a nomination or if he starts a third party, the chances of him being elected are somewhere between none and zero. And the support the Republicans who are going to vote in the primaries are currently lending to Donald Trump is effectively full-fledged support for Hillary Clinton. So I don't know that this is true. I don't know that. I have no evidence of a conspiracy in any of these cases.
1990, Playboy interview, Donald Trump. Well, if I ever ran for office, I'd do better as a Democrat than a Republican. His political contributions have been mixed throughout the years, because he's part of a big corporation, but they have been far more heavily weighted to Democrats than Republicans until 2010. In 2010, everything shifted. He started putting a lot of money towards Democrat money. I mean, if you look at the PACs that he gave money to, huge amounts of money, by huge amounts, I mean hundreds of thousands, no more, going to political action groups and so on for Democrats.
To the left.
To the left.
And
why?
By the way, during that same time period, he also said he was for complete freedom of choice on abortion. He advocated opening the borders up and letting anyone who wanted to cross, cross. There's a whole series of things that he was very vocal about 5 years ago. Today, he's suddenly hard right wing and reversed all his positions. I think this happens from time to time. Is it legal? Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and Hillary Clinton, by the way, was Secretary of State from 2009 to 2013. 2010 is when he starts giving all of his money to Republican-backed issues. He may really just dislike Hillary Clinton.
No, you said in 2010 he started supporting Democrats.
Well, I'm sorry, it was the other way around. 2010, he was. I have the red and the blue confused because red seems like it's communist, and
right,
but
yeah,
it's backwards. So I'm sorry about
so
that.
So he suddenly started in 2010 supporting Republicans. Okay.
Right. He's supporting Republicans. So, maybe he just doesn't like Hillary Clinton. That's
yeah, but
a possibility.
That doesn't make any sense. If he didn't like Hillary, then what he's doing right now is her best shot to get elected.
Yes.
Right.
And
unless he thinks he can get elected and he really doesn't like her.
I'll tell you one thing and then I'll hang up. My wife posed an interesting question to me the other day. She said, well, what would you do if it ends up being Donald versus Hillary? I told her, I guess I'll have to stay home.
You know, and that's, very frankly,
That's really the point.
In fact, I was talking to Lynn Willey about this very subject. If Jeb Bush, who is the Republican, the sole Republican out there who's likely to receive enough general election support to make a serious run for president, if he is nominated, most of the conservative Republicans, and by that I mean Tea Party-leaning Republicans, will not vote. They've told me that. If Jeb Bush is elected, he's too liberal, so they won't vote. So what they're doing, in essence,
is guarantee the win.
I'll be very frank with you. I am a pretty much apolitical person, and I can tell you that the chances of Hillary Clinton being our next president are probably about 80% right now.
Yeah,
and I wish I could tell you I'm really unhappy about that.
The Republicans just aren't very organized right now.
But I am in the business of managing investment portfolios, and I really like it when I see those portfolios grow. And it really makes me sad when I see them shrink. And if you look back on the last 50 years and you look at Republicans and Democrats and you figure which is better for the investment portfolio, man, the Democrats have it hands down.
The issue
right,
there,
I've heard that on your show before.
Let me give the opposite of that. Yeah, let me give the opposite of that, because you could say that congressional policy has more impact on the economy than presidential policy, and it's not generally the credit that's given. And during that same time period, Republican Congresses tend to have better markets than Democrat Congresses.
Mm-hmm. But
so what we really need is a Republican Congress and a Democrat president if all we're looking for is market return.
Yes. But, you know, I'm just telling you, and again, I'm not trying to say that I support Hillary Clinton. I don't. I don't support her positions.
I wouldn't mind if she was president, and I know that's going to cause a lot of people to go, what did he just say? But the reality is that she's, as liberal as she is, she's nowhere near as liberal as the other Democrats that are out there. She's a lot closer to the center than Donald Trump is. She is closer to what the majority of Americans want to happen, and I realize that that is a weird thing, but the president really doesn't have a lot of power if there's a Congress that's on the other party. And right now we have Republicans in office. And what I'm afraid of is what happened with George W. Bush when he was in office and he had a Republican Congress and they just went crazy with the spending. Come on, you're Republicans. You're not supposed to do that. That soured me on the Republican Party. I'm really into checks and balances right now. If we get a Democrat in the White House, I'm happy because we have a Republican Congress. I don't want Republicans in both branches right now because we don't have a good history with Republicans in both branches. They do things that are not very Republican.
Well, you know, and it really boils down to our party system is pretty simple. The party that is more sane tends to get the presidency. And by that I mean if the Republicans who vote in the primaries insist on nominating somebody who's unelectable in the interest of purity, they're not going to have a president. And that means they've done a poorer job of selecting their candidate. So the other side wins. And if the Republicans who vote in the primaries determine that a presidential candidate who was nominated, they're not going to support, if as a group, we, and I am a voter in the Republican primaries every time, so I get Republican stamped on my card, so I'm one of the we's.
I don't have a card. I don't vote in primaries.
If we vote, you don't have a voter ID card?
I have a voter ID card, but it doesn't have a party on it because I don't vote in the primaries.
Well, if we as Republicans insist on choosing somebody whose positions are such that if you dig into them, they don't work very well, and the general population agrees that they don't work very well, then we don't deserve to have a president.
Yeah. Sure. Thanks for the discussion. I'll hang up and let you guys go to another topic.
Thank you very much. All right.
All right. So I went from talking about Cecil the Lion, which is a very controversial subject, to saying I wouldn't mind if Hillary Clinton were in office. That's a very controversial. And now I'm about to talk about Obamacare. How's that?
You're going to talk about Obamacare. you are just trying to
I'm painting a big target on myself.
Yeah, when we go out the door of the studio after the show, right, we could be in some difficulty.
You know, when I'm talking about this, I'm trying to be realistic. And the reality is that if we do have cross-party politics happening, if we have Republicans in the House and we have a Democrat,
that's called bipartisan, by the way.
It's bipartisan, and we tend to not do stupid stuff when that happens, because when the president tries to do stupid stuff, the Congress won't let them, and when the Congress tries to do stupid stuff, the president won't let them.
When the Democrats control the House, the Senate,
and I'm good with
and
that,
the presidency, we got Obamacare,
because the reality is that I am for small government. And even if we have big government that's not doing anything, that's better than big government. I'm all for that. So if that's why I'm saying I wouldn't mind. It's not that she's my preferred presidential candidate, but I don't see, as long as we have a balance, I don't see a lot of damage happening. And then I bring up Obamacare. And yes, there was tax increase for Obamacare.
But very small portion of the population.
Right, and we were talking about a 2% increase in taxes for a very small percentage of the population, when people in Europe are worried about 50% unemployment for their youth. We're talking about very tiny debate issues that people get very hot over here. Mm-hmm. And the reality of the effect of Obamacare is that every state in the nation has had an increase in the percentage of people covered by health insurance, which has caused a slowing to the increase in medical costs. We have slowed down that huge, massive snowball that was flowing, causing medical costs to continue to go up and up and up and up and up. That was a mixed metaphor, by the way, because snowballs go downhill and this prices were going up, so... Anyway, I was mixing it. You have something to say.
You know, one of the things, if you're listening to this and you're a Republican activist and you're against Obamacare, there's a question that I've been asking and I haven't received any answers for, and that is, in 2017, any and all states have the option of enacting a law or laws that will provide health insurance to the same people that are covered under Obamacare today.
Right. Using the rules of the state rather than the federal government.
And they can just come up with any kind of program they want. And I keep hearing repeal and replace on Obamacare.
Well, can repeal and replace. You can just do it here.
and what I'm interested in knowing is why no state, including Texas, has come up with an alternative. I mean, Texas is under Obamacare. Now, we've chosen not to fund the Medicaid side of it, despite the fact the federal government would pay for it.
Well, for the first five years, it would.
And I'm not going to get into that. I don't think that that's a – I think it's actually it keeps medical costs in Texas higher than they would otherwise be. The fact that we have not extended the Medicaid.
I do have a problem with it in that we are paying the taxes, but we're not reaping the benefits of the taxes that we're paying. It's going to the other states because we're refusing the money.
All that's beside the point. If we have a replace, where is it? And this is, I think, a legitimate question. They say repeal and replace because you can't just repeal. If you repealed Obamacare today, you would have hospitals and medical insurance companies failing from one end of the country to the other because just the way the system is structured now.
It has to be a gradual change, like Obamacare was.
Right, and you can't even undo the insurance. We got like 16, 17 million people now covered.
More than that.
At least, you know, so we have tens of millions of people who are covered for health insurance now who, if Obamacare were repealed, would suddenly lose their health insurance. So my question that I've not been able to find anyone who can answer, I certainly couldn't answer it, is why hasn't, for example, Texas come up with an alternative program?
I'll give you the answer to that.
Okay.
The answer is politics. By giving the name Obamacare to health care reform, by saying that this was a Democrat thing, by allowing it to be owned by the Democrats, it now, for Republicans, has just a horrible taste in the mouth whenever it's brought up, even though Nixon and Reagan were the ones that invented the concept.
Well, but the whole point is, I keep hearing, you know, from all the campaigns I hear repeal and replace.
Right.
Replace with what?
Well, they definitely don't have a replace plan. That's the thing. And part of it is because if you start to talk about...
If we have a better plan, though, here in Texas, then we should, enact it.
As soon as you start talking about another plan to regulate this area, people start looking at it as a Democrat thing rather than... It's the whole concept. And I said this back when Obamacare was a nickname being applied to this whole thing. Don't cause this to be a Democrat issue because it's something that was invented by Republicans that the Democrats hated. And the idea that this, and the reality is that this plan is closer to the Republican plan than to the one that Hillary Clinton was talking about. Hillary Clinton wanted a single pay system. And what we have is a private system where insurance companies come up with the plans and then there's a market for it. So as bad as it is, it's still more Republican than what would have been there had Hillary Clinton gotten elected. And so this is even after me saying I wouldn't mind if she, because we already have Obamacare in place. She's not. That was her kind of her fundamental issue. It's not a big issue anymore, at least not for the Democrats. For the Republicans, it's a big issue, but it's more about trying to go back in time to remove insurance from people rather than to come up with a better alternative. And the better alternative is there. If you go back to Reagan's plan, and if Texas were to take Reagan's plan, just take Reagan's plan and implement it, we would be the best nation, or the best, calling Texas a nation. What am I saying there?
You mean run for governor.
Right. We would have the state with the best healthcare plan as far as actual usability in economic terms, as far as lowest cost for taxpayers, as far as good rates and good competition in the insurance market. And one of the things that Obamacare messed up, even by putting a marketplace there, is that the competition is limited because they have to fit into the boxes that are provided by Obamacare. And if the insurance companies were allowed to produce their own plans and equally compete with them, you would have a much more viable solution. So there's my rant and my soapbox.
Well, we're getting a little short on time, but the telephone numbers are still 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
Another little tidbit out there in the larger scale. The Eurozone still is teetering right on the edge of deflation and slipping back into a recession. By the way, that's one of the reasons that Greece is still in the Eurozone.
Because they're teetering?
The recognition of the debt combined with the massive flow into Europe of refugees would put them in recession. We do have a problem in the United States. There's one of those things, and you're probably aware of it, and I think it's fascinating. the governor of Puerto Rico, since they're probably going to default on Monday, is on vacation.
I would do that, too, if I was in the middle of
the
default.
And they have adjourned their legislature, and everybody's gone on vacation.
Nothing they can do about it at this point.
And this is the interesting thing. Almost all of them have left Puerto Rico.
Well, it's a good thing to do at this point.
Why would you stay? Next month, or this month, the majority of the bonds that they're defaulting on are owned by Puerto Ricans who use them for retirement income.
Yes.
Because they're tax-free.
Yes.
See, Puerto Rico, they don't necessarily pay federal income taxes, but they do have a state income tax that's pretty steep. And the Puerto Rican bond interest is tax-free. So the wealthy people, the more wealthy people in Puerto Rico who are retired, have a lot of Puerto Rican bonds, and they're not going to get their interest payment. And I think
it was one of the solutions that I was thinking would have been tried, is that the Puerto Ricans should have taxed their own bonds, the income on the bonds, because then they would have been, in essence, lowering the interest rate for them in what they were paying.
But
they're not.
Nobody else
does
it either, so they didn't either. And it's one of those things, again, if you look at a Puerto Rican bond, if you can find one that actually is trading right now, the interest rates on them are truly an amazingly high interest rate.
Really, really high, and if people are only looking at interest rates, then anyway.
And there's a bunch of hedge funds at home right now. So you are listening to The Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And we probably bored you to tears for another 2 hours again.
I know we bored me to tears.
On this August 1st, 2015. We do have a business that functions during the week, and we have a voicemail on the weekend. And you can contact us locally at 947-1111 or...
You can reach that same voicemail toll-free, 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can email us directly, jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. Or you can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com. You can listen to our podcasts if you didn't get enough.
And further lower your IQ.
Right. You can read newsletters. We got a new one out. It's pretty good. Old Baldy out here has golden fingers. The way he wrote this one up was pretty amazing. You can see our ugly mugs and see our beautiful staff. So until next week, this has been the Personal Wealth Coach.
It's not just a word on your Fox News station. News Radio 1400 KTEM AM, Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.